Castillo went to the window. In a moment, Mons and Max followed. Ordóñez pointed to a tall building across the street, the open, ornate masonry towers of which seemed to be 50 or 60 feet below them. Ordóñez said, "Sir John Henry Millington Drake, the British ambassador, who was a close friend of my great-grandfather, climbed to the top of the towers you see there. It was raining hard, I understand. He must have gotten soaked. To watch the pocket battleship Graf Spee sail out of the harbor and scuttle herself. When the conditions are right, you can make out her superstructure." "Interesting man," Castillo said, as the memory bank suddenly opened. "After seeing to the burial of his dead and negotiating the terms of the internment of the rest of the crew, he put on his dress uniform and shot himself to prove that he had scuttled his ship to save the lives of his men, that he personally wasn't afraid to die. He positioned himself so that his body fell on the German Navy battle flag rather than the Nazi swastika flag." Ordóñez said, "I thought perhaps you, as a graduate of your military academy, would know who Langsdorff was." "Yeah, I indeed know who he was. An officer and a gentleman who lived and died by his code, death before dishonor, the motto that murderers, rapists, drug dealers, and other human scum in prisons now tattoo on one another to help pass the time." "Of course," Castillo said. "My great-grandfather told me, Colonel Castillo, that despite the public story that said it was Millington Drake's eloquence and strong personality that caused the Uruguayan government to scrupulously follow international law and order the Graf Spee to leave Montevideo within the 72-hour period required by the law, it was in fact enormous pressure applied by the United States government, which, as I'm sure you know, was, like Uruguay, ostensibly neutral in the war between the English and the Germans, that caused it to do so." "I hadn't heard that," Castillo said, "but it seems credible." "So, what are you doing here, Coronel? You know, I'm sure you remember me telling you you're not welcome here. So again, what is it you're doing here?"
"I'm helping Ambassador Lorimer move on to Estancia Shangri-La."
"Ambassador Lorimer?"
"Jean-Paul Lorimer's father. He's a retired diplomat. You didn't know?" Ordóñez did not reply directly, instead asking, "Why on earth would he want to move to a remote estancia in Tacuarembó province?" "The Lorimers lost their home in New Orleans to Hurricane Katrina," Castillo said. "It is, or at least was, under 15 feet of water."
"I understand that Mr. Lorimer, the late Mr. Lorimer, had an apartment in Paris. Wouldn't that be more comfortable for Ambassador Lorimer?"
"The ambassador told me the United Nations took his son's Paris apartment off his hands at a very good price. He said he had the feeling they would rather he didn't go to Paris."
"So he decided to come here?"
Castillo nodded.
"What are Young and the others doing at your embassy?"
"The State Department, actually the Secretary of State herself, called Ambassador McGrory to tell him to help Ambassador Lorimer in any way he can. They're going to see him about that." Ordóñez took a notebook from his pocket, read from it, then asked,
"Who are Sparkman and Leverett?"
"Sparkman is the co-pilot of the Gulfstream. Leverett is the ambassador's butler. He's going out to Shangri-La and set things up. As soon as that's done, we'll fly the ambassador and his wife down here."
"All right, Colonel. That's your cover story. And it's a good one."
He paused as he looked him in the eyes. Then he added,
"Now, let's get to the truth. Why are you here?"
"I just told you Castillo began, but when he saw Ordóñez hold up his hand and was about to interrupt him, went on. And I need your help.
To do what?
Ordóñez asked matter-of-factly. I need to secretly move helicopters into Uruguayan airspace, refuel them, and fly them out of Uruguay.
Using Estancia Shangri-La?
Using Shangri-La, Castillo confirmed.
And what would the helicopters be used for?
One of our DEA agents in Paraguay is being held by drug dealers. My orders are to get him back from the people who have kidnapped him.
You know who they are?
Castillo shook his head.
Or where they are holding this man?
Castillo shook his head.
Not even in which country?
Castillo shook his head again.
Then this man whom you have been ordered to rescue could be in Uruguay.
That's possible, but unlikely.
Have you had the opportunity to meet Comandante Duffy of the Argentine Gendarmería Nacional, Coronel?
Ordóñez asked.
I know he was hoping to talk to you.
I met Comandante Duffy this morning.
Did he tell you that two of his men have been murdered and two kidnapped, presumably by the same people who have taken your man?
Castillo nodded.
Did he tell you what he intends to do to the people who have done this, or who he thinks may have done this?
He didn't spell it out in so many words, but he made it pretty clear that he intends to take them out.
He intends not only to kill them, but to leave their bodies where they fall, as an example of what happens to people who murder gendarmes.
Castillo nodded.
Much as you did with the people at Shangri-La, Ordóñez added.
Castillo met his eyes for a moment. Castillo then softly but angrily said,
Sorry, Ordóñez, won't let you get away with equating what happened at Shangri-La with the cold-blooded murder of Duffy's gendarmes.
You're not going to deny that there were six bodies, seven, counting Lorimer's corpse, left lying in pools of blood at Estancia Shangri-La, are you, Coronel?
Actually, eight men died at the Estancia, Castillo said, his voice rising. I lost one of my men, and we damn near lost Alfredo, but we acted in self-defense. They opened fire on us without warning. We returned it. They died. What the hell were we supposed to do? Call a priest? Give them the last rites and bury them?
Jose, Mons said evenly. Colonel Castillo went to Estancia Shangri-La with plans to take Lorimer back, alive, to the United States. Violence was neither planned nor expected.
And you went with him, Alfredo, fully aware that kidnapping is just as much a crime in Uruguay as it is in Argentina, Ordóñez said.
Mons, his eyes narrowed, nodded.
And was making off with Lorimer's $16 million planned or expected?
We didn't know about the money until we went into Lorimer's safe, Castillo said.
So you're admitting you stole the money?
Neither Castillo nor Mons replied.
What did you do with the money?
Alfredo and I spent most of it on whiskey and wild women, Castillo said. Ordóñez stared at him coldly. So tell me, Ordóñez, what happens now? Castillo asked after a moment.
You escort us to the Bucabus? Excuse me. Well, obviously, our coming here has been a waste of time. You're not going to help us. But on the other hand, we've given you no reason to arrest us. We've broken none of your laws.
Not today, Ordóñez allowed. Except, of course, the small matter of trying to get a senior police official to acquiesce in your violation of the laws of his country.
We came to ask for your help, Jose, Munz said with an edge in his voice. Help in getting a fellow police officer, who happens to be an American, back from the hijos de puta who kidnapped him. The hijos de puta who have him
also have two of Duffy's gendarmes, Ordonez replied evenly, and have brutally murdered two of his gendarmes. And that's what worries me, Alfredo. That's who worries me.
The narcos or Duffy? Muntz asked.
You and I both know, Alfredo, that these people are not ordinary narcos. If they were, I'd probably be hoping, may God forgive me, that Duffy would be leaving bodies not suitable for viewing in their caskets all over Corrientes and Entre Rios provinces, and for that matter, Paraguay. He's right, though the kidnapping and the murder of police officers cannot be tolerated, and that leaving bullet-riddled bodies on the side of the road or at narcotics refining plants would send that message far more effectively than running them through a justice system where, sadly, justice is often for sale.